Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. Logos appear. Rook's Nest. Backup Media. Paradise City. And Rumble Films. Words appear. Netflix presents a Netflix original film. A Rook's Nest Entertainment, Backup Studios, Paradise City, and Rumble Films presentation. In association with Memento Films International. A man with a goatee sits in a dingy room. An unseen man addresses him.
So what do you think, Joe?
I don't know. I don't think that's for me to say. Second chance. I mean, it's a nice idea, but...
How do you feel?
Feel? I feel that I was a nightmare. I made terrible choices. I drove my family away. I hurt people. I didn't mean to, but there it is. And for all that, there's a hole inside me now. It hurts. I carry it.
Like Phil Coakley hurts?
Of course not. But I know the work I've done. You've seen that.
Yeah, I have.
Right.
Joe takes a sobriety chip from his pocket.
I got almost 6 years. That's real. That's clarity. I can't do anything about before that's done. But I can show people I've changed. Like, with my behavior. And my girls.
He sits across from a prison chaplain.
I can be their father again.
That's what you want.
That's all there is. Second chance. Why not?
I have faith in you, Joe.
Thank you, Bruce.
A prison guard comes to the door.
Would you like to take communion before you go?
Oh, no, I'm good.
Joe leaves the room, stops to collect his belongings, then leaves the prison. He glances around, seeming to savor his freedom, then climbs into a waiting taxicab.
Yeah.
The taxi drives along a rural highway flanked by fields and lined with streetlights and telephone poles. Arriving in a small town, a sign reads, "Welcome to Bradley County, population 12,800. Sits in the back seat of the taxi, watching out the window as they drive through town and onto a residential street. They pull up to a modest two-story house with a front porch. A pickup truck is parked in the driveway.
Keep the change.
The taxi drives off and Joe ascends the front steps and heads for the door. Now in a kitchen, Joe sits at a table drinking coffee. An older man preps food.
Your mother's got her soup line today. Late. I think we expected to see you next week. I should have meant to be here.
It's okay.
Well, she'd have meant to be here.
He tries to take the lid off a jar and winces, clenching his hand. Joe steps in to help, removing the lid easily.
Retired, huh?
Yeah. I couldn't hump the lines anymore.
Joe takes over chopping lettuce and tomatoes.
Look, you know, it's such a long trip up there. And my back being what it is.
I know.
Still, we should have. I just,
I know.
They brought some of your stuff back when they closed your apartment. It's downstairs in your space if you wanna.
Sure.
Putting down the knife, Joe strides across the room and opens a door leading to a set of stairs. In a basement, a makeshift bedroom is set up. Joe glances at items, then walks over and opens a box. He moves aside a teddy bear, then sifts through the box, taking out photos. Photos in hand, he walks over to sit on a nearby bed. Photos of a younger Joe holding a baby, then kissing a blonde woman. Next, a photo of two young girls with long hair. He nods, seeming sentimental, then picks up a bedside phone and dials.
Where'd they move to?
We don't know. We haven't spoken to Elaine since you went up.
What about the girls? Birthdays? Christmas?
We are not in touch anymore. You never called?
She wouldn't accept them.
Well, she's not obligated to. This settlement was clear.
I contested that fucking settlement.
A clean break now, Joe. All the girls are young. It's a shame, but maybe she's right.
Can I borrow the truck?
Your mother will be home.
Dad, I've been indoors 6 years. Please.
Alone in the pickup truck, Joe drives off. A car waits around a corner unseen, then follows him. At the Bradley Central Library, Joe uses a computer. He types Elaine Denton into a search engine, then tries Elaine Bruvik, New York. Next, he enters Courtney, Melissa, Bruvik, and basketball. A school team photo appears and he notes the school name, then searches H.B. Stowe Middle School office staff. A dark-haired librarian eyes Joe as he walks out. Nearby, the Bradley Caller newspaper headline reads, "Will the heat ruin the pumpkin festival?" Underneath, a smaller article shows a photo of Joe in uniform with the headline, "Slash Cop Out." Joe uses a payphone.
Hello?
Melissa?
Yeah?
It's Daddy, sweetie. It's your dad. Huh? How are you, baby?
Good.
How's your sister?
She's okay.
It's great. You know, I've been away because, well, I had to be away. It wasn't my fault what it was, but I was sick. But now I'm better, see?
And we.
Melissa, wait. I love you.
Joe?
Hey, sweetie.
How did you get this number?
I know. I just wanted to talk to the girls.
Joe, you know that's not allowed.
I should be able to speak to my...
Listen to me. You're violating your agreement.
Agreement?
You call again.
Why are you...
I'll press charges.
Well, this is...
Looking dejected, he hangs up. Now evening, Joe walks through town.
Is Joe such a bad boy?
He bumps shoulders with a man walking towards him, apologizing.
Sorry.
He passes a bar, stopping and looking at the door as if wanting to go in. He hesitates and keeps walking. Returning, he bounds up the stairs and through the front door. Inside, he sits alone at the dingy bar, holding the sobriety chip in his hands. The bartender brings him a shot of liquor. He puts down the chip and picks up the shot glass, smelling the dark liquor. Clenching his jaw, he hesitates and puts the full glass back down. He stares at it on the bar, then grabs it and downs it in one swig. Joe motions to the bartender to bring another drink as a man in army fatigues walks up behind him, tapping him on the shoulder.
Joe motherfucking Denny.
Scotty.
Look at you. Look at you! God damn, it's good to see you. Hit one and put that on mine.
Oh, that's kind of bad. Cheers.
Oh, it's the least I could do. It's the least I could do, man. Figure you and Billy were... You're like brothers, so that makes us like brothers, so being home.
And to my brother, Billy.
To home and to Billy.
They each drink a shot, then Scotty picks up a mug of beer.
Hey, I wanted to say hey, welcome you back. If you need anything.
Thanks, man.
Scotty wanders off. A woman sidles up to the bar and looks over to Joe.
You know, I come in here a lot and pretty sure I've never seen you before.
I'm new.
New used, maybe. Mm-hmm. But it's what's under the hood that counts.
Yeah. Right?
Not the paint job. The ride is just so...
I get it. Cars.
Enjoy.
They exchange a lingering glance, then she caresses his arm.
Do you, want to buy me a sucker punch?
Oh, boy. I don't know what that is.
Please?
Joe leaves the bar. The woman follows.
Hey!
Hey.
Now what?
No, I gotta go home.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
That's boring. Wanna give me a ride home at least?
The pickup truck headlights shine down a dark, remote road.
You sure this is the right way?
Yeah, it's down there. Right over there.
Watch your way. I told you I'd get clean, girl.
Joe stops the truck.
Okay.
She reaches over and turns off the ignition.
You know, I thought you were going to try something with me.
I'm just giving you a lift.
She unbuttons her sleeveless blouse and leans over seductively. Joe looks at her, then looks away.
You mean ask my name?
What's your name?
Kara.
She smashes her own head against the dashboard.
Ah! Kara, Coakley, motherfucker!
By car lights turn on and men jump out, opening the truck door and dragging Joe out as Kara clutches her bleeding head. It begins to rain. Silhouetted in the car's headlights, several men attack Joe. Kara sits in the truck watching. Bringing her hand to her mouth, she appears shocked by the brutality of the attack. Blood splatters onto the window. Joe walks back toward the truck. He has overcome the other men. Kara looks scared. Now Joe sits in a police station holding a cloth to a cut on his head.
Coffee?
A suited man walks in.
I'd say it's good to see you again, but I feel sick just being this close.
Nice to see you too, Dan.
Lieutenant Pleasant, don't you dare use the informer with me, you fucking degenerate. You're an everlasting disgrace to this department. And if Officer Barnett wasn't here, I would tune you up myself on general principle. Let me ask you something. Did Manny Vassy or any of his animals visit you inside? Was it worth it? Selling your soul to them, you Judas fuck?
Where's the DA? Isn't he coming?
A second suited man, bald with deep facial scars, arrives. He sits across from Joe.
Look, Phil, this is not how I want.
One of those young men is in intensive care.
The one with the nunchucks?
His father is an alderman.
I don't give a shit if they're astronauts. Charge me. Put those assholes on the stand and watch them come apart like wet bread, because you know exactly what this is. They're parked in the middle of nowhere with ninja weapons precisely where and when their girlfriend happens to get assaulted. Come on, be serious. Now, your daughter built herself a cute little frame, but there's no way this ends in anything but a civil suit that buys me your fucking house.
You're right. I spoke with Kara just now. She's quite shaken by what happened. She's been angry lately. Do you wish to press charges? In light of the statement given by my Kara, regarding the events of this evening, you have the right to press criminal battery charges against the men who attacked you, and my office will issue arrest warrants.
Forget it. It's in the past.
Joe winks at Phil.
Phil. If I could change what happened, I would. But I paid my time. I just want everything to stay in the past.
Like you want Billy Caldwell to stay in the past?
Phil leaves and Dan Pleasant follows, stopping to glare at Joe.
You betting zero, shithead.
Joe presses the cloth to his head. Later, he sits alone on an outdoor bleacher bench. Floodlights illuminate a football field. Dan arrives, still in his suit. He sits next to Joe and swigs a beer.
God damn, I miss high school.
I just passed a kid in the lot, molesting his girlfriend in the backseat of his 82 Dodge.
Kind of impressed that Phil's kid went for hard stuff like that. She always seemed like kind of a flake to me.
But then the mother did leave after the,
Dan swipes his hands across his face.
Oh. That's got to be kind of rough. You look like you lost a little weight. Usually all that starchy food they...
What's up, Dan?
How's that for matters after all I've done for you? Hey, 6 years in county beats 12 years in the state house. Those boys down there would have spread you out like my crazy aunt's quilt.
Yeah, those Manny's grease, not yours.
Speaking of the king.
Dan hands Joe a rolled up paper bag. Joe takes it and peers inside.
I didn't ask for this. So give it back.
Joe puts the bag and contents in his pocket.
Uh-huh.
He swigs a beer and Dan lights a cigarette.
You heard about Manny? Cancer. In the butt. Matter of time now.
Well, he had a good run. Junior can steer things now. Nothing to do with me.
Clean slate, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but... you're on the hook here, Joey. Manny's gotta go.
Dan gets up and walks off. Joe follows.
You said cancer.
Before then. Now. Yesterday.
What the fuck are you talking about?
That old time religion. Old man's found God. Craving salvation by way of confession.
Bullshit. He'd never flip.
Old man he wouldn't. But Diane's made him smaller. So let's consider now, specifically, the kinds of things that he might confess to, say, vis-a-vis you. Yeah, now you're seeing it. You think Phil's comment about Bill Caldwell was coincidental?
And he's talking to Phil.
Crazy, right? First he wants Phil hit, and his asshole's melting, and he wants to give him absolution. Christ forgives, a sinner is saved, all of that. Phil's nudging him towards a deposition, and if he lives long enough, a grand jury. But even if not, you'd be inside so fast your bunk would still be warm. And no favors this time.
What do we do?
We? You got a turd in your pocket? You know, Phil's been trying to butt-fuck you since forever. And if Manny sings, he can do it. And if you do get keistered, I'd worry I'm next in line. And let me tell you what ain't gonna happen.
If I was gonna roll over, wouldn't I do that before serving my fucking time? I did the job they wanted.
No, half the job. Semantics.
Fuck you! I took the fall.
Teens in a car drive off. Dan looks over.
You be sure and send her some flowers now, son. The point is, you left Phil breathing all those years ago, or it wouldn't be a problem now. The way I see it, it's your mess. But hey, I'm more into carrots and sticks, so... let's talk about your girls instead. Junior high by now. Family court judge by the name of Winthrop found himself overserved one evening a while back, and he dented up front of his Prius with the skull of an address-free citizen. You might say I helped him sweep that up, and I know that he would fall all over himself doing me a favor in return, like revising your custody deal, for instance, so you can see your daughters again.
Dan holds up his beer can.
What am I thinking? I gotta drive.
He tosses it.
Manny goes, you get your girls back. That's the carrot. The stick? Who wants to think about that? Do it fast.
Tossing Joe a phone.
Answer me on that if I call. Don't make me come after you.
Joe watches him drive off. Joe takes another swig of his beer and tosses the can. Morning. In the basement room, Joe lies in bed. He holds a thick roll of money, turning it over in his hands. He places it back in the paper bag and places it in a bedside drawer. Upstairs, Joe's father putters in the kitchen. An older woman sits reading the paper, looking up at the sound of footsteps.
He lives.
Joe hugs his mother.
Oh, I guess you needed the rest. Mm. That's okay. Is that a bruise?
Oh, no. I was there already. From a door. Give me a hand?
Yeah.
Making soup.
Joe opens a cupboard, takes out a mug, and pours himself coffee.
Oh, hard time sleeping.
Well, this is a big adjustment. Give it time. I'm sorry I wasn't here when you arrived.
I already told you.
It's okay. Oh. It's okay. Oh.
Got our wires crossed, I guess. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you first.
I was just wondering, what are your plans for work?
I haven't been home a day yet.
It's a reasonable question. Your first night home, you're out till dawn with your father's truck. I just don't want things going back to how they were. Not here.
Says you don't speak to your grandchildren.
That's Elaine's decision. We just want what's best for them.
What about me? It's impossible to you that I might have changed.
You know, every Sunday in church, I have to see Phil Coakley. And everybody there sees me seeing him. Have you ever thought what that might feel like? To me? Have you changed?
Joe takes his sobriety chip out of his pocket.
You know what this is?
You expect me to be impressed because you didn't drink in jail.
Dad, come on.
Look, see, this is complicated.
No, it's not. You say you've changed. Good. I hope it's true. I've prayed for it long enough. I'm happy you're home, and I love you. Mm-hmm. But you don't get extra points for doing what's simply required, what everybody else does. You have work to do, Joe!
Joe storms out. His father shrugs. He returns holding his hand out. His mother shakes her head, but his father relents and gives him the truck keys. She gives her husband a disapproving look and he returns his attention back to his food prep. Joe drives along a remote road, then parks. He sits in the truck talking to himself as if rehearsing. The truck window is cracked and still streaked with blood. He gets out and approaches an upscale house on a quiet street, making his way to the front door. The day is sunny and a gentle breeze blows through the trees. Standing on the front porch, he peers through a window in the door, then glances around before ringing a doorbell. He steps back and clasps his hands together in front of him as if steadying himself. Phil approaches the door.
Hi, Phil.
Stone-faced, Phil steps outside.
I was out of line when I spoke to you last night. I thought about this a lot. What I wanted to say to you when I finally saw you, and that wasn't it. What I did want to say was that I am profoundly sorry. I was truly in fear for my life. I felt I was defending myself. That doesn't excuse the... I don't even remember it. Insane.
Which is it?
Which?
You're in fear for your life? You don't remember. Which is it?
Point is, I do take responsibility. And I'm ready to move ahead with a clean life, a good life. Take responsibility and just... You know, amends. You mentioned Bill Caldwell. He was my friend. I loved him. I just wish he'd gotten into the program like I have. Worked the steps. There's a whole other world you can live in. He just didn't know.
Phil reaches in his waistband and pulls out a gun.
You're within 100 yards of my home here. I'm not interested in some chicken shit restraining order violation. For you, I want the needle. And I'm gonna get it.
Okay.
Okay. Angry is the best.
Joe turns and heads back to the truck. Looking agitated, he speeds along a remote road and bangs his fist on the steering wheel. Wrought iron gates open, a long driveway leads to a mansion with multiple luxury cars parked outside. Joe arrives. Now inside, he meets with a gray-haired man.
I guess you heard, huh?
How's he doing? Can I, he took care of me in there.
The man relents, and Joe walks up a staircase, down a hallway, and into a bedroom. A frail, elderly man lies in bed, hooked up to multiple machines and an oxygen tube. He reads the Bible. He sees Joe walk in and tucks the Bible under his blankets.
Hey, Manny.
You're on the same drugs as me.
How are you feeling?
I'm working on my anger. What?
Oh, nothing. It's not something I thought I'd ever hear you say.
What'd it ever get me?
Well, this. Lots of things.
I don't want them anymore.
Dan gave me a bag.
You did your bit.
Sure. I blew the job.
And I warn you about the drinking and the drugs.
You did. I should have listened, but... Since I didn't, I guess I was expecting someone to clip me in there and not pay me when I came out.
If you knew how much it cost to sell that imperfect self-defense line.
Manny, come on.
Yeah, I admit I was angry about Phil. You blew her clean shot at him. Mm. But since you'd already taken care of Billy... Even though he went over to them. He was your boy. So, that meant something.
I bet Junior disagreed, huh?
Yeah, well, Junior has a lot of different ideas. About a lot of things.
Joe grabs the pain dosage button.
Funny you mentioned talking to Phil.
Give me that fucking thing. I hurt
in a sec. Because what I hear... There's this notion floating now that maybe Billy wasn't an accident.
There's always talk.
Manny, are you talking to the DA?
You know, sometimes when I'm sleeping, I think I see what hell looks like. It ain't fire. And it ain't devils. You know what it is? It's just me. And I ain't no goddamn stool pigeon.
I'm sorry.
been a tough few days, so.
Giving the button back.
Mafia. Tough. Everybody.
Manny drifts off and Joe walks towards the door. He hesitates, then looks back at Manny. He returns to the bedside, placing a pillow over Manny's face and smothering him. Joe hears someone approaching and presses harder. The door opens and a nurse walks in. Manny is propped up in bed, eyes closed. Joe sits innocently in a nearby chair.
He nodded out, pressed the thing there and just...
It's the pain. We upped the dosage.
The nurse checks the machines, then adjusts Manny's oxygen tube.
We should probably let him rest.
Of course, of course.
They leave the room together.
I'm Joe.
Charlotte Boyd.
Old friend. So how is he? I mean, it's bad, huh?
I'm a hospice worker.
Yeah, well, he's a fighter.
Now downstairs, Charlotte walks away.
Charlotte, thank you for taking care of my friend.
Outside, the gray-haired man stands on the front steps, confronted by another man. A third and fourth man, along with two children, wait nearby. Joe comes out.
You gonna sit there with your stupid fucking shirt and tell me I can't go in and see my own father? My kids can't go?
I just want you to call first, Junior, that's all.
Oh, I see. Did this cocksucker call first?
Hey, Junior.
They're gonna see Poppy.
Wow.
Go inside and play the quiet game, okay?
Oh, man. You guys are so big.
Hey, close that door behind you. The AC's on, all right?
God damn it. They grow so
yeah,
fast.
How you doing, Joe?
Junior kicks Joe in the crotch.
Now, you lay there with your hands on your scrotum and listen. You are not welcome here. This is a family time. And this family no longer has any use for dumb fuck grief-causing policemen. Now, you come around here again, bothering my father, disturbing his rest. I'm going to bring you down to my playroom. You know what happens there.
Joe nods.
All right, come on, let's get up. I think we'd all feel better if you moved on.
Joe gets up slowly and shuffles away, then stops and turns around.
Hey, Junior? Any idea what Phil Coakley talks to your dad about? Besides the Bible, I mean.
Now, why would you say something like that? I mean, all these years, my father carries your crazy ass. You're implying he's some kind of rat or something? All right, yo, break this motherfucker's mouth.
Puta, blad, stoy!
Junior's two henchmen chase after Joe. He runs. Avoiding the wrought iron gate, Joe stomps through the bushes surrounding the house and hurries to the truck. The window shatters as he speeds away. In a cafe, Charlotte sits reading. Joe strolls in, walking up to the order counter.
Hi. Can I have a coffee, please? Thank you.
Charlotte looks up and sees him. She glances up several times until she catches his eye.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
He passes her a plate of food and sits down at her table.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for taking care of my friend.
You said that already.
Hmm. Were you from Bradley originally?
I moved from Montreal around 2 years ago.
You got family?
No, no.
So do you work there every day at Manny's house?
6 days a week, usually.
Hmm. Wow. And all of his, I don't know, medication and monitoring and all that, that's all you?
That's me. And another girl. We do split shifts.
Wow. That must feel like a big responsibility.
I guess it is. I don't feel overwhelmed.
No?
But I'm good at helping people.
I guess your agency provides you with
supplies and medication and whatnot for there at the house. My father had lymphoma. And they had him on so much different stuff there. At the end, he didn't know what day it was.
I'm sorry, it's a terrible disease.
Yeah. Actually, I just moved back here myself. Everyone's gone now. I was doing some consulting.
A white-haired man walks over and spits on Joe's food.
What the fuck? Sergeant Tom Doyle, retired IUPA local. And you, sir, are a worthless goddamn punk.
He spits again, and his wife ushers him away. Charlotte looks shocked.
I think I'm gonna skip this one. Do you think you might want to get together again? Like I said, everyone's gone now, and I like you.
Joe stands at the bar of a strip club. He watches a pole dancer, then talks with the bartender.
You know, if you want, I can set you up with Tony. Welcome home, toss.
You know we take care of cops here. Now, your old buddy, he's on a weekly.
Two men get into a fist fight.
Hey, hey, Bruno, get that fucker out of here. Get the fuck out.
Who's the peacock?
It's your old man. I got this old jealousy thing going. Anyway, if you want to spend some time with Tony, it's on me.
Pass.
Suit yourself. Hey, one in the eye.
Pointing to his nose.
Oh, no thanks.
In a dressing room, Joe and the bartender sniff lines of cocaine off a counter.
Oh, yeah.
Joe stares at himself in a mirror, wiping the powder from his nostrils, then inhaling deeply. Yeah. Evening. Joe's parents sit in their living room watching TV. Mrs. Denton looks anxious.
Marion Barry tonight delegated many of his duties as mayor of the nation's capital, but did not resign.
She glances over as headlights come up the driveway. Mr. Denton turns down the volume on the TV. Joe walks in and ignores his parents.
Excuse me. That is not your vehicle.
Oh, that said it was fine.
Where have you been all day and why are you rushing in like this?
For your information, I went to a meeting.
Where?
What?
Where was the meeting you were at?
It's anonymous, Mom.
We're not gonna do things like this. I'm telling you right
now! I'm doing
now.
Everything I can!
All right, okay.
I wish I could believe you, Joe, but you make it so hard.
No, you make it so hard because you don't want to believe in me.
I said believe, not believe in.
See?
Now, listen.
The onus is on you.
What difference does it make when you're determined to judge me?
Could I have some support here, please?
Oh, no, wait. Well, fuck it. I'll be gone soon anyway.
What's that supposed to mean?
He goes to the basement room.
This behavior is precisely why you lost your family, Joseph!
Morning. Joe stands at a wrought iron fence peering through to a lake. He chats to himself as if rehearsing. Charlotte arrives. He turns to greet her. She hands him an arrangement of greenery. They start walking. Later, they walk and talk as they stroll across a bridge. Now evening, they dine at a restaurant.
Would you like another one?
No, thanks. What?
Thank you for asking me here. I don't usually, and it's nice.
Like I said, I like you.
Me
So, Montreal. What prompted the move south?
Polarity? Weather systems? Why does anyone do anything?
I don't know.
Do you ever feel like you're living in the wrong skin? Sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll go to get a glass of water and I'll just catch myself in the mirror and I don't recognize myself at all. It's like someone else has come into my bathroom and just stood there. Does that ever happen to you?
Sure.
In an adjoining room, couples do salsa dancing. They turn to watch.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Jo follows her onto the dance floor. They dance separately, then together.
Entre el hombre y la mujer hay amor y odio a la vez.
Now the door opens to a dimly lit, cluttered room. Charlotte leads Jo inside. He glances around at her belongings, including dirty fish tanks, then steps closer to her.
I'm just gonna go. Do you want a drink or something?
Okay. You?
Yes. Just.
Okay.
Jo walks into a galley-style kitchen. A cat sits on the countertop and greets him. He ignores it and picks up a bottle. He takes two glasses out of a cupboard and pours red wine. He glances around to make sure Charlotte hasn't returned, then opens her fridge. Inside are vials of medication, including several large bottles of morphine. He hears her and closes the fridge, picks up the wine glasses, and returns to the living room.
I like your place.
It's what I have.
They each sip their wine, looking nervous.
Why me?
Because you're good.
He leans in and kisses her. She backs up towards the bed and he follows, still kissing her. Later they lie in bed. Charlotte plays with the hairs on his chest.
I think everything happens for a reason, you know?
Like what?
Meeting you. No, really, I've been having kind of a hard time. Just alone, you know? And things just feel different now. Hmm. Hope that's not weird to say. Anyways, do you have any other clients? Other than Manny, I mean. I noticed you had, I don't know, it looked like pharmaceuticals or something in there. And the reason I ask is because before I moved back, one of the firms I was consulting for had this guy.
Oh, Joe.
No, it's true. He was really...
Really consulting. You were in jail. He was in the paper. Your picture was in the paper. Slash cop, it's at, which is just. What happened?
Didn't you read it?
I'm asking you.
I was very drunk, coming home from a place downtown. Apparently, I bumped into him, the lawyer. There was a fight and I hurt him badly.
It said you had a knife.
Oh, I thought he was gonna. It was dark and I If
because I know what it means to need a second chance. And I didn't know you when you did those things. I know you now.
He kisses her passionately. Later, a phone rings. Joe wakes in Charlotte's bed, looking confused, then reaches for his phone.
Hello? Didn't wake your girl.
In an industrial area, Joe meets with Dan.
I was hoping I would have heard some sort of in memoriam item by now about our mutual patron.
I fucking tried. Junior was there.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. I can't get that close again. If anything other than cancer happens to Manny, I'll be the first one he comes after.
Figure it out. Put in some work instead of getting your dick wet.
I was working. She's the nurse there.
Oh, good thinking.
Except that won't work either.
Why not?
It just won't. There's no access, trust me.
All that matters is that there isn't a case brought against you. Phil is the only one eager to throw bombs, and everybody else knows that Vassies are good for business. So if you can't clip Manny, clip the mutant. There's no time left. Just make it look right is all.
At home, Phil lies in bed asleep, a framed family photo including Kara at his bedside. Seen in silhouette, a figure sneaks into the bedroom and opens a bedside drawer with a gloved hand, taking out a gun. Phil stirs but remains asleep. The figure stands up. It's Joe, with the hood of a sweater pulled up. He points the gun at Phil's head. He hesitates, then moves it under Phil's chin. Phil stirs and rolls over. Joe's eyes widen as he sees thick, ropey scars covering Phil's entire back. Looking reluctant, he moves closer, pointing the gun at the back of Phil's head. He retracts his hand and puts the gun back in the drawer. He leaves the house. Morning. Joe is asleep in his basement bedroom. His mother shouts down. He gets out of bed. Now he stands outside a building, pressing an intercom.
Hello?
It's Joe. I need your help.
Who is it?
Joe.
Oh, hey, man. Come on up.
Seriously, Joe, it's no problem.
Positive?
I reserves piss test randomly, so I stick to booze.
Scotty hands him a cup with a lid.
You keep the cup.
Thanks, man. I owe you.
Hey, Joe, can I ask you something straight up?
Sure.
Back then, was there ever any, any talk about what happened to Billy? Maybe it wasn't an accident? I mean, we all know he was a lush, but falling asleep on the tracks.
Wasn't my case. I knew the guys who drew it. They worked it right. Why now?
Phil Coakley called me. He wants me to come in.
Mm-hmm. You say why?
He said they're gonna impanel a grand jury and reopen it as a homicide.
Based on what?
New information. That's all he would say. It's like he wanted to dangle it in front of my face. Fucking prick.
Herbertfield says he's got his smoke. He's fishing. He's got a hard-on for the Vassies, always has. There was talk about Junior, maybe he'd been around the tracks that night. But they could never back it up. It was what it was, a shitty accident, like you said. Sorry, man.
They shake hands.
I never liked Phil anyway. I was glad when you fucked him up.
Joe pats Scotty on the shoulder and leaves with the urine sample. Next, he exits the police station. Dan approaches him in the parking lot. Waiting until he's behind a car, Dan tasers him.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, fellas!
Joe drops to his knees and vomits. Yeah.
Now he gets it. Get it all out. Okay.
He hoists Joe into the truck, then climbs into the passenger seat.
This thing works pretty good, huh? Now, I didn't wake up in this mood. I was thinking, don't worry, my pal Joey will carry his water on this thing. But then I hear, no. This Caldwell grand jury is in motion after all.
I know.
Did I tell you time was short? Did I tell you what was coming? And what did you do but fuck around?
I'll just take my chances in court.
Buddy. You know I wouldn't be able to let you do that.
Then I'll run.
Well, that either. Do I need to recharge your battery?
I can't do Manny. I can't do Phil. You name a third way, I get the fuck out.
I just bought a new gas grill. Stainless steel, got an infrared system on it. To be honest, I don't even know what that means. But if you think that I wouldn't buy some crackhead nigger for $500 to come into your parents' house and slit their throat while they sleep, if it meant that I got to keep that grill, well, you got me mixed up with somebody else. Manny's deposition is Monday morning. 36 hours. Now, you fix it before then, or I'll assume that we're at odds. And then, goddamn, everything's on the table. And I really do like your folks.
Dan gets out of the truck. Joe watches him stroll casually back to his own SUV. Calls the strip club. The bartender answers.
Kelly's.
Hey, it's me.
Hey. How you feeling today?
You know, I was thinking maybe I'd want to talk to Tony.
You mentioned preferentials?
Yeah. So you know when she sees Dan then, or where?
Dan. I never mentioned Dan.
I was talking about Phil Coakley. How else do you think that Frankenstein motherfucker's getting any pussy?
At Kelly's strip club, Joe meets with dancer Tony.
Where did you meet him?
English Garden Inn off 68.
Same room or different room?
We had a retainer number 27 on account of the queen's eyes.
Can you get him to see you again?
I don't want to see him.
A grand.
$1,000.
Cash. After.
She nods. Outside, Joe makes a call.
I think I can do it.
Good boy. Which one?
Neither. Got a way to freeze Phil out. Nobody gets hurt.
Oh, girl. Did I knock a fuse loose?
I can back him off. No grand jury. No Manny Vass. It's done.
Must have a hell of a wedge.
Bradley's most saintly public official. Solicitation on tape.
Ha! Is that real?
Well, I'm looking at it.
Goddamn. Phil's still got some gas in his tank after all. He is mighty precious about his reputation, but still, blackmail's messy. You ain't careful.
Nobody dies, Dan. It's clean.
As long as it's chill.
Oh, it will be.
That's my boy.
Joe arrives at Charlotte's, knocking on the door. As it opens, he kisses her passionately and they go inside. Later, Joe sits at the kitchen table eating. Charlotte wears a robe and pours a cup of coffee, bringing it over to him.
Thanks.
She watches him for a moment, then smiles.
You seem different.
How's that?
I don't know. Lighter.
Things are gonna work out.
Maybe they already have.
She feeds her cat.
I'm gonna have a shower.
Why?
As Charlotte leaves the room, Joe glances around. He furrows his brow when he notices a snake-like creature in a jar of formaldehyde displayed on a bookshelf. He answers his phone to Tony, the pole dancer.
I told him I'd see him again if he laid off the Jesus.
He damn near jumped in the phone.
Great. I'll be right there. I'll call you tonight!
Driving through town, a wide grin spreads across Joe's face. Now in a low-budget motel room, Tony lies on the bed smoking as Joe organizes surveillance equipment. He holds a small video camera and tries out viewing positions under a TV stand directly across from the bed. Tony watches as he uses duct tape to hold it in place. He glances over to her and she shrugs. Joe leaves the room, a backpack slung over his shoulder. He glances around to be sure he hasn't been seen, then walks down the outdoor corridor to another room several doors down. In his own motel room, Joe sits in the dark. The TV is on and he glances between it and the vertical window blinds, watching, waiting. He gets up and dances to the TV jingle music. He sees car headlights pull into the parking lot. Outside, Phil gets out of his car. Joe watches him enter the motel on the ground floor, then emerge from a second-story door and approach the room where Tony is waiting. Joe sits down and discreetly watches through the blinds, seeing the door open and Phil disappear inside. Joe sees the jealous man from the strip club enter the ground floor looking angry, then emerge on the second story. The man pulls out a gun, bursting into Tony's room. Joe recoils at the sound, sitting down, wide-eyed. Phil emerges from the motel room unharmed and hurries away. Waiting until Phil is driven off, Joe leaves his room, rushing toward Tony's.
Police, stay in your room!
Inside the room, a spa tub is filled with water. Joe sees the jealous lover, motionless and face down on the floor. Tony is splayed on the bed, a gunshot wound to her head. Joe checks under the TV and finds the video camera missing. Only the duct tape remains. He looks over to Tony. The gunshot seems to have gone into her eye. Her face is a mess of blood and he looks away. He leaves the room using his shirt tails to cover the doorknob as he turns it. At the family house, Mr. Denton sits alone in the living room. Joe arrives home.
Joe, I gotta talk to you.
Looking reluctant, he joins his father in the living room.
All right.
Mr. Denton passes Joe a book titled Understanding the Narcissistic Personality Disorder.
I read this while you were inside. I didn't know there was a name for it. I have always known, since you were little, there was something in you. And I didn't do anything about it. I've done a lot of soul searching about my part and what happened to
you. Yeah, you didn't do anything.
Let me finish. That's what I'm saying. I didn't do anything. I didn't make you run with wild people. I didn't make you gamble all that money. I didn't make you take drugs or drink liquor or be so goddamn angry all the time, Joe. I knew how you were. I did nothing to help. I am sorry, Joe. For that, I am truly sorry. But I've got to do something about it now. For your mother, for me, maybe for you, I don't know. But this cannot continue. Give me the keys.
Dad.
Give me the keys.
Joe concedes and hands over the truck keys.
Tomorrow morning, you're gonna have to leave.
Dad, I'm leaving right now.
Joe gets up, pats his father on the shoulder, and heads to the basement.
Joe.
In his room, he goes straight to the bedside table and opens the drawers. The paper bag of money is gone. In the kitchen, Mrs. Denton has joined her husband. Joe comes upstairs to confront them.
Where is it?
I will not have dirty money in my house.
It's not dirty money, it's my money.
Who keeps that much money in a bag unless it's dirty money?
You have no right to go through my stuff.
We have every right. Where did it come from? Where?
What's the difference? I'm leaving. You get your wish.
My wish is to have my son back.
All right.
I don't know who you are.
Take it easy, Joe.
I'm going. Okay, I'm going. But I need that bag. I am dead without it. So where is it? Please. Please.
No. No.
In their bedroom now, Joe ransacks the room, dumping out drawers. He stops when he finds photos of his daughters visiting with his parents, along with drawings and a large stack of letters. Waving them at his parents, he looks emotional.
You've been in touch this whole time.
The best thing that ever happened to those girls was to get away from their father.
As seen from the exterior of the house through the windows, they all return downstairs and the fight continues.
Fight at all!
Fuck you!
Just stop.
You'll never hate me as much as I hate myself.
A window shatters. Blood oozes from Mrs. Denton's neck and she slides to the floor, cradled by her husband. More bullets rip through the house and Joe drops to the ground to get out of the line of fire. As the shots stop, Joe sees the headlights of a car drive off. As he lifts his head, his father shouts.
Oh! Run, 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 run!
Looking over at his father cradling his mother, he looks shocked and gets up in a daze, picking up the phone. Joe and his father sit in the hallway of a hospital, waiting.
Dad? Who did it? Junior Vassar or Dan Pleasant, I don't know. Your friends. Bring mayhem with you, Joe.
Joe gets up and walks away as two police officers approach. Next, he arrives at Charlotte's in a taxi cab. He stands on her doorstep, disheveled and head hung low. She looks surprised as she answers the door. She helps him inside. She gently washes the blood from his hands. She leans in and kisses him tenderly. They recline onto the bed together. Later, they sit and talk.
What happened was I got behind with my bookie. It started slow, you know, a couple of Sundays of bad luck. Next thing I know, I'm underwater. I kept thinking, I'm gonna sort this out. I'll dig out from this. My daughters, when they look at me, when they look at my face, they'll forgive me. Me and another cop, a guy named Dan. We did whatever Manny said, and he said two terrible things. Now it's happening all over again. He's gonna talk about all that now, Manny is, and when he does, that prosecutor is going to give me the death penalty. Not assuming Dan doesn't kill me first.
You don't know that. You don't. We're not defined by our pasts. You've remade yourself. You've chosen to be a good man. It's a choice, that's all it is.
In prison, it was a chaplain, Chaplain Morris. And he sat with me for fucking years. I'm telling you, if someone tells you for that long that you can be forgiven, you're the only one who made me feel like maybe he was right.
He was.
I need money to run.
Charlotte considers his request. Later, she sits alone, stroking her cat. Morning. In Manny's mansion, Charlotte prepares medication in the kitchen. Upstairs, Manny lies in bed asleep, still hooked up to the machines. Charlotte walks in with a tray of medications. She She checks the machine stats, then slides a blood pressure monitor on his finger and changes his IV drip. She glances at him as he mumbles in his sleep, then makes notes on a chart. She checks her wristwatch for the time and adds it to the chart. She takes the oxygen tube from his nose, then presses gloved hands over his face, suffocating him. He struggles weakly, but she easily overpowers him, keeping up pressure until his hand goes limp. She takes a deep breath, then looks up and sees Manny's son, Junior, standing in the doorway watching. Joe lies in Charlotte's bed. He wakes to the sound of her cat hissing at something unseen. He gets out of bed and pulls his clothes on. He doesn't see a note Charlotte has left on the mirror that reads, "Second Chance, XO." As he opens the front door, Junior's henchmen grab him and drag him to a car. They speed down a rural highway. One of the henchmen drives. The other sits in the back seat with Joe. Junior sits in the front. Handcuffed, Joe notices one of the men take keys out of his pocket, turning them over in his hand. Menacingly, Junior slides on black leather gloves and takes out a utility knife.
Gonna go.
Big time.
But you're gonna see the playroom first.
Junior, you don't have to do this. I swear I'm gonna leave. Whatever Phil is gonna do with your dad had nothing.
My dad? My father is dead. He was a great man, a king, and well, there'll never be another one like him, right, fellas?
Fuck you.
Junior lunges at Joe with the knife, slicing his mouth.
No! Your girlfriend is the most confident nurse I've ever seen. Jesus Christ, you sound like she did. But don't worry, you'll see her again.
With handcuffed wrists, Joe cups his bleeding mouth. Now they drive down a narrow road flanked by farmers' fields. The road winds and becomes more isolated. An old truck door panel logo reads, Vassy Recycling. A scrapyard is filled with old cars, shipping containers, and rubble. They pull off the gravel road and park on the grass, hauling Joe out.
Where is she? Out there?
Let's go. Who's that?
Junior leads the way.
We're gonna go in there together, you and me. We are gonna go down there and work it all out. We got all day, don't we?
There's nothing to work out. I didn't do anything. It wasn't me.
That's not what she said.
We don't have to do this. It wasn't me.
All right, come on.
No!
What the fuck is this?
Junior looks over and sees dust from a car up ahead. The henchmen put Joe on the ground.
Car! Где? Машина! Вот смотри! Какая? Блядь, здесь!
The henchmen draw guns and one walks towards an abandoned camper.
Там, смотри!
An unseen sniper in army fatigue shoots from behind a storage container, hitting one henchman, then Junior. A derelict car explodes. The sniper is Scotty. He continues shooting as an injured Junior and the second henchman return fire. They He's down on the ground. Joe sees a discarded pipe and manages to get himself up. The second henchman lies on his belly shooting. Joe clubs him with the pipe, knocking the gun out of his hand, then smashing the pipe into his head. Straddling him on the ground, Joe grabs him by the collar and smashes his head onto the ground repeatedly until he stops moving. Scotty swigs from a liquor bottle, still holding his assault rifle. He shouts at them.
Bill is my brother!
Suck my cock, you fucking retard!
Joe fumbles with the henchman's keys and unlocks the handcuffs on his wrist, freeing himself. Scotty runs out of liquor and smashes the bottle. Junior opens fire, hitting Scotty in his armored vest. He recoils, then returns fire, hitting Junior. Junior's head explodes. Covered in blood, Joe gets up slowly, visibly shaken. He looks at the carnage around him and turns away, staggering through a field of long grass. In the field, he finds a concrete slab with a trap door. He stops and looks skyward before taking a breath and reaching down to open it. He stands at the opening, peering down, the contents unseen. He turns and walks away. Now he speeds down the road. A bleeding Scotty sits in the passenger seat.
You hold on, okay? You just hold on. Scotty, you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Good. You're gonna be fine. I'm getting you help.
Yeah. Because you were like a brother to Billy. That makes you like a brother to me, right?
That's right.
So if he didn't fall on any fucking train tracks, did he? Not the way they said. You put him there.
That's crazy, Scotty. Just, we're almost there, okay?
Junior told you to do it. And you did it. I talked to Phil about it, you know. He's not such a bad guy.
Did you maybe take a shot at my house, Scotty?
Yeah. Sorry.
Joe is parked in a secluded area in the woods. Scotty still sits in the passenger seat, struggling not to choke on the blood filling his mouth. Joe uses a rag to wipe down the steering wheel, ignition, and keys.
Hey, Dan.
But you said your plan was nobody. And I ain't complaining. He'd do some work on his brakes or what?
His what?
Bill's car.
Flashback to the night of the motel shooting. Phil speeds out of the parking lot. His handgun and the video camera are on the passenger seat. As he is driving, he picks up the video camera and views the footage. Phil caresses Tony. Her jealous lover bursts in and shoots her in the head. Phil ducks out of the way but comes up shooting, killing him. After the footage ends, Phil sees a video of Joe setting up the camera, Tony lounging on the bed, smoking. Phil is so engrossed in the video that he runs a stop sign. A large pickup truck careens into him at high speed.
Got into a smash-up last night, went up in smoke. You did it. You're free. Now we'll get started with the judge. Get your girls back.
Joe hangs up. Scotty sits motionless beside him, his eyes closed. Joe gets out of the car, wiping down the door handles. He returns to his parents' house, still in upheaval from the shooting. He searches the kitchen for the bag of money. He searches through cupboards and drawers. Looking under the sink, he searches through the trash can. He pulls back the liner bag and looks underneath. In the bottom of the trash can, under the liner bag, is a paper bag. Inside is the thick roll of cash. He sighs with relief. His father comes up behind him. Joe puts the money in the paper bag and stands up to face him.
How is she? She's gonna live. What are you doing?
I'm leaving.
What are you doing with that?
You want it?
His father spits on the floor.
What are you doing with it?
I'm taking it to the girls.
No, you're
not. I'm not trying to buy them. Just gonna give it to them. Most of it. See them once more and then I'll
no,
just...
You're not. You are going nowhere near those girls. Money, no money, I don't care. You will never be in proximity enough that your damage and mayhem ever touches them, not even for a second. I promise this to you, son. This will not happen if I am alive.
Joe shoves the money in his pocket.
Bye, Dad. Sorry for everything.
No, you're not listening. I said, it will not happen. I said, no.
He blocks Joe's way.
Stop me.
Joe pats his father's shoulder harshly and shoves him out of the way. Reacting, he picks up an object off the kitchen table and lunges at Joe, stabbing him in the gut. Shock registers in Joe's eyes. They hold on to each other until Joe stumbles backwards and slumps against the banister. A large kitchen knife protrudes from his abdomen. His father steps forward, but Joe puts up his hand, gesturing for him to stop. He backs away. Joe gasps for breath, then reaches for a towel. He wipes down the handle, then puts his own hands onto it. He looks at his father, then lowers his head as he gasps for breath. Joe's eyes flutter, then slide closed. title, Small Crimes.
La conquista y el poder.
Credits, directed by Evan Katz. Screenplay by Evan Katz and Macon Blair, based on the novel by David Seltzerman. Produced by David Lancaster and Stephanie Wilcox. Executive producers, John Schiffman, Evan Katz, Julia Godzinskaya, Michael Sackler, Sophie Vickers, Joel Thibault, David Adlin Jackson, Jean-Baptiste Babin, Emily Georges, Naima Abed, Nicholas Kaiser, Andrew Schwartzberg, and Jamie Schwartzberg. Original score by Will Blair and Brooke Blair, starring Nikolai Coster-Waldau as Joe, Gary Cole as Dan, Molly Parker as Charlotte, Macon Blair as Scotty, Pat Healy as Junior, with Jackie Weaver as Irma Denton and Robert Forster as Joe Denton Sr. A Rumble Films production, a film by Evan Katz. Also starring Michael Kinney, Daniela Sandiford, Sean Lawrence, Eddie Holland, Jason Finney, Anatoly Zinoviev, Glenn Bowser, Larry Fessenden, Tara Yelland, and Derek Barnes. Copyright Small Crimes, LLC, 2016.
La conquista y el poder son un valor.
Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.